is the Mountain Life. I'm Lynn Ware Peak. Twice a year, millions of Americans reset their clocks for daylight saving time. But is changing the clock really what's disrupting our sleep, or are we fighting something much deeper, our own biology? As Congress debates legislation and approves legislation that could make daylight saving time permanent, questions about our internal clocks are more relevant than ever. Joining me today is award-winning science journalist Lynn Peoples. She's the author of a book called The Inner Clock. She'll explain how our circadian rhythms influence everything from sleep and mood to metabolism and disease, and why many scientists believe living in sync with our natural clocks may be one of the most powerful things we can do for our health. Lynn Peoples, welcome back to The Mountain Life.
Well, it's great to be back on with you. Thank you.
I love talking about circadian rhythms. I think it's because my circadian rhythm is so strong. No matter how late I stay up, I am still awake at 5 a.m. and I feel hogtied by my circadian rhythm. Tell us how strong these circadian rhythms are.
Well, you know, that depends. But yes, I mean, circadian rhythms are really foundational to our whole physiology. I mean, as you alluded to, we're evolved on this planet that's spinning, right? So we get light, we get dark, and our bodies evolved accustomed to that pattern. So all of our body systems have these little clocks that are predicting, you know, where in that planetary cycle we are, so they can optimize their functions. And we think about sleep, and that's really, you know, one of the key outputs of that system is when we're going to get tired, when we wake up, and so trying to optimize that sleep window at night. But it's also driving our immunity. It's driving our metabolism. So when we throw that system off kilter, it can really have a lot of ramifications for our mental health, our physical health, how productive we can be, our performance. So our lives are really tied to these inner clocks and tied to the sun, ultimately.
Well, we'll get more into the health. I mean, immunity, metabolism, these are big, big things that affect many aspects of our life. But let's talk about the Sunshine Protection Act for a moment. So this just passed in July with broad bipartisan support in Congress. It still has to pass the Senate. This is something, the Sunshine Protection Act, making daylight savings time permanent. It's been something that has been in legislation for decades, really. And sometimes it seems to me that it's making daylight saving time permanent, and sometimes it's getting rid of it altogether. Can you just give a brief history?
Yeah, so right. This is something we talk about, you know, at least twice a year whenever we're changing our clocks. And like you said, there's been legislation, bipartisan legislation. So this is really not so much a political, you know, red-blue issue. But there's been proposals that have been put through or proposed to Congress that, yeah, kind of stalled out repeatedly over the last decade or two. And basically, you know, on the whole, the public and our legislators seem to agree that we should stop this flip-flopping of our clocks twice a year. But there has not been, you know, uniform agreement on which way to go. And now the latest edition of the Sunshine Protection Act did in fact pass the House, and it's on to the Senate right now. So we're kind of in wait. But obviously the debate's back up again, and we're bouncing around the same questions and the same concerns that we repeatedly seem to be talking about. But yet, you know, having obviously delved into this issue for several years now, I think a lot of the conversation is missing some of the key points. You know, I think not everybody's really connecting that, you know, this is really about the way society has oriented our lives with the clock on the wall, like our strict schedules, when we need to arrive to school, when we need to arrive to work. That's really what this is about, right? It really doesn't matter the orientation between when the sun is rising or setting by the clock on the wall, if we didn't have to set our alarms for 6 a.m. to get to school on time, right? And then also the idea that, you know, in different places, depending on your latitude, if you're, you know, one of the northern states or you're living on the western side of a time zone where the sun is rising later, you know, this is, the impacts are going to differ. So, you know, for example, in Seattle, where I'm at, it'd be a little different for you. But if we adopt daylight saving time permanently, in the winter time, the sun isn't going to rise till after 8:30 for 2.5 months of the winter. And I think that the winter time is really what's at play here, right? Because that's where we would be, you know, locking the clock. And so we'd continue to observe daylight saving time through the winter.
Right. So you've been a proponent for getting rid of this time shift by an hour twice a year, I believe, but it's not making daylight savings time permanent. You're more a proponent of getting rid of it altogether for reasons like you're talking about. Is that right?
My opinion has actually evolved a little bit, and it is nuanced as the science is. I think the worst thing we can possibly do based on the science, based on our health, is for this bill to pass. We do not want permanent daylight saving time for our health. Because again, that is essentially stealing an hour of morning light, which our circadian system really needs to keep entrained and allowing all the systems to function properly. It's stealing that hour of morning light and it's tacking it on to the end of the day. And that's essentially the opposite of what our bodies want, which is bright morning light and dim evening light or darkness, I do. So it's really flip-flopping that equation. And that's confusing our internal clocks and it can potentially throw things off. However, permanent standard time is the other option, right? And there's actually a bill that's been proposed called the Sunshine for Our Kids Act that would do that. That would set standard time as the default across the country. And both of these bills do allow some flexibility for states to opt in or out, but that would be the default. And while that is ideal for our circadian rhythms, there is some debate about, you know, again, where you are. In Seattle, do we need the sun to rise at 4 a.m.? I don't think so, personally. I don't necessarily need that light beaming into my window waking me up at 4 a.m. So there's a reason that we've done this biannual change, ultimately. And yeah, it's annoying. And there's some evidence of some slight acute effects and, you know, upticks in heart attacks and car accidents in the days after the switch in the spring. But there's also ways in which we can help mitigate that and help people prepare so those impacts aren't going to be quite as severe.
So really, the issue is more when we lose an hour than when we gain an hour in the fall. So losing an hour in the spring, springing forward, that really creates the issue more so than in the fall, where, of course, if we gain an hour, that's an extra hour of sleep.
It's just like, well, not just like, but it's akin to jet lag. So if you were traveling across some time zones, you might, and a lot of us don't get around to it, but you might try to prepare your body for that shift. You know, you might try going to bed a little earlier each night before you travel so that when you land, you know, you can kind of get up and running and enjoy your vacation, for example. So there are ways in which we can, yeah, just slowly adapt ahead of time so that 1 hour change isn't quite so much of a shock to our system.
So it would seem to me that there is a bigger reason that there's legislation than just our health, which really should be the primary reason that we would enact legislation to improve our health. But I'm imagining that there are all these other questions out there, political things or things like the fact that maybe not all countries, although I think most do, also engage in a daylight savings time. Some states don't. What's the reasoning behind it?
Yeah, there's a lot of factors at play here. I think everybody's kind of watching to see what everybody else does to some extent, right? Europe is also having these debates right now. As you said, you know, there's a lot of countries that do this flip-flopping. There are some that have decided to go on permanent standard time. But yeah, there's a lot of us that are flip-flopping. So we're kind of eyeing each other. What's everybody else going to do? And then a key point here is that a lot of the legislators that have proposed or backed the bill the current, you know, up for debate bill, Sunshine Protection Act, they're from Florida. So, you know, this is kind of interesting. There's certain industries, certain businesses that are likely to benefit from the daylight, from having permanent daylight saving time. And one of those is golf. You know, there's some commercial interest, retail, you know, golf courses being lit by the sun later at night, they're going to probably bring in more business, right? So there's certain financial incentives behind this as well that we could think about. You know, one of the original reasons that people began to observe daylight saving time was this idea that it would save energy. You know, we have daylight longer, so we don't need to turn on our artificial lights indoors. That argument's really kind of dissolved over time. I mean, now we have LED light bulbs that don't burn a lot of electricity, and air conditioning is becoming an increased source of energy use, right? Especially now with these heat waves across the country, it's not hard to think about. So that argument's really not valid at this point. But there are commercial interests, there are definitely businesses that could benefit from having light later.
Right. Well, I know that some countries that are closer to the equator, there would be no reason to have daylight savings time because year round, the sun sets and rises at roughly the same time. There's not so much of a swing. I would also imagine that the legislators in, say, Alaska or, you know, Maine, maybe our more northerly states, would want to preserve a daylight savings time. And for good reason, you know, so like in Seattle, as you say, the sun doesn't rise at 4 a.m. because who needs that? You'd rather have a light hour towards the end of the day. I don't know. Does that track at all?
I think where you're going with that is right. But it's kind of, it might be to some extent the opposite because it's a trade-off. Again, that more early sunrise in the summer can be problematic. But the bigger concern, I think, for the health professionals and scientists I've spoken with is that lack of morning light in the winter. Mm-hmm. So if we were on permanent daylight saving time, again, and especially in the northern states, and if you're on the western side of a time zone, that sun is just not going to rise till it could be 8 or 9 in some places for weeks on end. And you think about students going to school in the dark and, you know, the commute to work in the dark. You got both the safety concerns there, and you also have the health concerns for our circadian system that is missing that morning light to sync everything up. And then light also, in addition to that, has, you know, more direct effects. It's alerting, it's stimulating, it boosts our mood. So to have to start the day in the dark without that, it's really putting everybody at a disadvantage. And most disadvantaged here, if we think about permanent daylight saving time, would be teenagers, would be other night owls, because teens are naturally more night owl-ish. Those of us, who drift late, who want to fall asleep late and get up late, they're likely to become even later, kind of the snowball effect, because they're not getting that light in the morning to try to pull everything back in sync and go to bed earlier at night. But yet their alarms are still going to be set at the same time to get to school or work on time.
I'm wondering about the levels of maybe depression in areas where if you're a regular workaday, you know, 9-to-5 person, and you live in a northern latitude, when you get out of work at 5 and it's dark and you basically don't see light, I mean, Is there something on that end of thing? Because here in Park City, when I get out of work at 5 and it's about to, I mean, it's basically dark during at least a month of the year, that kind of affects me and makes me feel like I should just go to sleep.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a reason people want daylight saving time, because we want light, you know, and we can't have it all, unfortunately. and it's also, I guess a couple of things there. Yeah, after work light, it's great. I think there's some evidence that people exercise more, socialize more if they have light to work with after they leave work. But the more subtle effects of that lack of light in the morning, we may not comprehend. You know, we might feel off and we might that same reason we're feeling kind of down in the winter when it's dark after we leave work could also have something to do with the fact we haven't gotten much light in the morning or any light in the morning. And so that, you know, this hour we're playing with, whether we're going to have it in the morning, hour of light we're playing with, hour in the morning or at night, there's no perfect answer. There's no perfect solution. There's no one size fits all. And it's also just the fact of nature that daylight is in shorter supply in the winter. Our day lengths are shorter. There's no getting around that, unfortunately. So I too suffer to some extent from winter depression. And it's tough. I love these long summer days. But there are other things you can do to try to mitigate. And there's evidence that getting, you know, one of those happy lamps, those sun lamps, if you use that for 20 minutes in the morning in the winter, that is going to help directly boost your mood, alert you, and help your circadian rhythms stay in sync. So, and hopefully lessen your seasonal affective disorder symptoms.
It's hard to make a blanket statement or broad generalization about everyone's circadian rhythms because, as I said, I am doomed to always wake up at 5 a.m. Right. And I have a couple of close friends who just say they would love to be able to go to sleep at 9:30 like I do, but they can't. They can't go to sleep before 11:30 or 12. And they would love to get up early like I can, but they can't because then they need sleep. So again, it's how do we make a generalization about what's going to be best for everyone?
Absolutely. And that's a really good point. So as you're alluding to, we all tick differently. Some of us are more early birds, some of us are more night owls, and that's biologically ingrained in us. But it can also be exacerbated by our behaviors and by the environment that we put ourselves in. So again, lack of light in the morning, whatever, you know, that can help, that could push us more. But the status quo, this biannual clock changing that we do, scientists tell me that that's actually kind of the best balance. It's the more equitable arrangement we could have for this variability between us. So having springing forward and falling back allows both the night owls and the early birds to have it their way for like half part of the year. And if we went one way or the other, then we'd be disadvantaged in one or the other.
So most sleep experts, it's my understanding, prefer to stick with the standard, permanent standard time versus the permanent daylight savings time.
They do. Yep, exactly. For the reasons I talked about, that's all came from them. It's, you know, that morning light being essential. And it's really what it comes down to. I think at this point, most of the researchers I've spoken with recently will kind of rank them, and this is what I've adopted, as permanent standard time being best for our health. And then the current status quo probably being second best. And then permanent daylight saving time being the worst choice of all.
So you are expecting this to be voted down by the Senate? Or what's the expectation here? What does it seem like we're on track to have happen?
I wish I could say. I've heard it both ways. I've heard people, you know, kind of doubtful that this will pass, partly because we've been here before and it hasn't, right? It's stalled out. So you know, based on the science, I kind of hope that's what happens so we don't end up with that permanent daylight saving time. But yeah, and time will tell what happens.
Let's talk a little bit about light and whether or not you mentioned the seasonal affective disorder, the happy lights that people use in places like Seattle and further north, I'm sure. And you say that there are some things that we can do to help our circadian rhythm along if indeed we decide we need more light in the morning. What should we prescribe ourselves light? How do we do that? What is it?
Yeah, I'd say, I mean, when the sun is available in the morning when you get up, the science shows that if you can get outside in that sun or at least be right up, you know, by a window for 20 minutes in the morning, that's great. You're going to help line up your clocks and set your body up for success throughout the day. You're going to be able to digest that food more efficiently. Your metabolism is going to be on. You're going to be sharper mentally. In the winter, when you're getting up and it's dark, this is where we have to kind of fudge things a little bit. You know, we evolved at the equator. We've adapted to some extent, you know, where we've migrated, but Yeah, I think there's definitely evidence that using one of those lights in the morning is gonna help you out. It's gonna potentially improve your mood and improve your rhythms and your health. But it's also true that our circadian system is somewhat flexible. We have some flexibility, and there's been studies that have looked at throughout the year that our systems kind of track those daylight changes. They kind of act as a calendar. So we can handle that, and our sleep ends up getting a little longer, and the timing's going to shift a little bit in the winter as it is. But if you are one of those that does, suffer from SAD, I think there's good reason to test out one of those happy lights and see if it does help. But yeah, morning light ideal. If you are a strong early bird, this is where, again, there's no one size fits all. But if you're a strong early bird, you can't stay awake at night, and you want to social, and your friends are going out at 9, and you just can't stay awake to do that, that's where some of this might, the advice might differ. That's where maybe having a little bit of light in the evening, a little more bright light in the evening, could actually help you, could help push your rhythms a little later so you can stay awake later and then maybe sleep in a little later. Personalized
Yeah.
medicine there.
Well, if we're so biologically tied to these circadian rhythms, what is happening to our biology when we try to shift or when we have to shift because of daylight savings time?
Yeah, I mean, again, our bodies are tracking, they have this kind of this internal calendar with circadian rhythms, tracking those day length changes. And when we throw a quick, abrupt hour change on it, which manifests as, again, setting that alarm for the same time in the morning. So our bodies are like, what? I was expecting to sleep another hour. And that hour of sleep could have, is likely to be REM sleep, which is really important. That usually comes up towards the end of our sleep period. So I think the biggest thing with the spring forward is we lose sleep. A lot of us lose sleep, especially if we haven't prepared our bodies a little bit. We can kind of reduce that whiplash if we start adjusting our timing ahead of time. So we have that, acute sleep loss. Our rhythms are just off. If we're expecting to have dinner at 6 o'clock, our bodies are going to be confused if we don't feed it at that same time. If you have pets, they don't know that we're changing the clock, and they're going to be expecting their meal at the time before the clock change, right? They're not anticipating that. So our system, it's an anticipatory system. It's expecting things to happen at certain times, and when we feed it things, whether literally food or other inputs at the wrong times, it's just going to kind of shift everything a little bit. And our systems are going to not be able to communicate with each other as well. Our digestive system, our metabolism, our immune system, and these things just get a little off. And an hour change doesn't sound like a lot, but it's enough to just kind of throw a little confusion into the system.
We are told that, or I guess I heard this somewhere, that if you, for example, go to Europe and, where the time difference is usually about 8 hours, that it takes you, for every hour of change, it takes you one day to recover. So if you come back from Europe, it'll take you 8 days to recover. Is there actual research behind that?
There is, absolutely is that, your body, if you travel across time zones, you're going to be in a new time zone, which means the sun is going to rise and set at that local time. And your body is going to slowly acclimate to that new light dark cycle, and the new meal times and everything else that you're giving it. And that takes about one day per hour change. You can speed that up with certain tricks that circadian science is showing us, again, timing of light, timing of meals, strategic use of melatonin. So you can speed up that. The problem with the daylight saving time switch is that the sun is still rising and setting at the same time. So you're shifting the clock time without shifting the light dark cycle. Whereas if you travel to Europe, you got a new light dark cycle localized that your body's gonna enter into.
Oh, that's interesting. So it can potentially affect us even more, just kind of negating when the sun is shining. It's
Exactly.
all very interesting. Well, Lynn Peeples is an award-winning journalist, and she's the author of the book The Inner Clock, and she writes about all kinds of things regarding sleep and light. And where can listeners find you?
Yeah, you can find a lot of my work on my website. So lynnpeoples.com, and P-E-E-P-L-E-S, or L-Y-N-N-E is my first name. Yeah, those both get confused sometimes. So yeah, I've got my book and recent articles there.
Okay, excellent. Lynn, thank you for joining me again on The Mountain Life.
Thanks so much for having me.